Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. The topic of today's show is sex and sexuality. I'm sure everybody's ears perk up when I say that. Many of us whisper about it, see it referenced in ads, and watch it portrayed on television or in the movies. Society is certainly more open about the topic of sex and sexuality than they were when I was a kid. During the 1950s and early 60s, TV ads were so censored, they had to show what a bra could do without actually showing a live woman wearing one. Now we have Viagra and other erectile dysfunction commercials plastered all over primetime television, and practically naked Victoria's Secret models seducing us right in our own family rooms. And then the book and movie 50 Shades of Grey came out and confused an entirely new generation of impressionable youth who are budding in their sexuality and may have misinterpreted the message to mean that sadomasochism is mainstream behavior in the bedroom. The average adult witnesses all these things and wonders how they measure up. They may know what they enjoy, but aren't sure if it's enough by today's standards. As a society, we are lost when it comes to sex and sexuality. But my guest today, sex expert, sex therapist, Melissa Fritchley, I got that right, wants to help us. She has written the Conscious Sexual Self Workbook to give us all the proper education. Her book gives us accurate foundational information about sex and sexual relationships, and it also provides questions and exercises, written and otherwise, to help us explore our own sexual history, values, and desires. Melissa Fritchley has a vibrant private practice as a licensed marriage and family therapist, sex therapist, and sex educator in Santa Cruz, California. She is adjunct faculty for two Bay Area graduate programs in counseling psychology and provides workshops and trainings here and abroad. In 2011, she was awarded the Sexual Intelligence Award for her groundbreaking work providing sex-positive training for counselors and caregivers in Uganda. So, now it's time to introduce my special guest to you. Let's give a warm welcome to Melissa Fritchley. How are you, Melissa? Welcome, and thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. I'm doing very well. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, this is going to be a very, very great show. I have a lot of questions.
Great.
But is there any way that you want to start before I start asking questions?
Well, I just wanted to say that I think, you know, your intro, you're so right. People are very confused right now. We have so much sexual information out there, you know, sexual titillation, sexual information, all of it sort of in our lives all the time. And people feel like they have to meet these external standards, but they're not even sure what those standards are because no one's talking honestly. So absolutely, you know, my passion right now is to help people kind of get clear for themselves about what their sexuality should be. You know, it should be unique to them. And so I'm so excited to talk with you and help spread that information. You know, listen to yourself. You are the expert about your sexuality.
Right. I mean, that's so true, and it's so needed in our society. So this is great. So what made you write this book? Because you wanted to get that message out?
Yes, I wanted to get that message out. And, you know, I've been doing sex therapy for a while, and I've been teaching sex education classes. And so the first level was just that how much people wanted this information, you know, and how much relief and actually lack, you know, reducing of shame would happen for people when they got accurate information and just sort of got to talk realistically and openly about sexuality. And then adding to that, at the time, you know, I had been working at women's crisis support with people who had survived sexual trauma, sexual assault, or childhood sexual abuse. And I kept hearing from my clients, you know, who've been down the road, they've done the work, they've done this incredible personal growth to recover from the trauma, to recover from the betrayal and the anger. And then they would say, you know, there's this whole other piece of my sexuality that I want to take pleasure in again. I want to enjoy. And there's no one who seems to be able to help me with that or talk to me about that. And so in some ways, those clients were my primary motivators in becoming a sex therapist and really learning about human sexuality, not just about the wounds of sexuality, but also about the gifts of sexuality. And so that's what started me down the path initially into sex therapy, and then writing the book was all this combination of my clients and my students who had just really shown me that this is so important and it can really help people's lives and make them so much happier in, you know, in lots of areas of the who they are and how they live.
And the great thing about the book is that you can do it in the privacy of your own home. So if you're a little bit embarrassed about talking about this or, you know, doing these exercises, then, you know, at least you only have to be embarrassed around yourself, and
right.
That's not going to happen, so.
Well, yes, I mean, it can happen a little bit, but it's certainly easier, and, you know, I was very aware that a lot of people can't afford therapy either, you know, or don't want to go and talk to a stranger, but want some support, and this, you know, I felt like the book was a great way to offer that.
It really is. So, can you tell us what the difference is between sexuality and sexual behavior? I think we're confused.
We are confused, especially in America, because we equate the two as the same thing, but they're not. You know, sexual behavior is what we do and don't do. It's actually just a percentage of our sexuality. But sexuality is something that we're born with from the very beginning. We're sexual beings, and it includes all these things, like the fact that our body has all these senses and can take pleasure in the world and can have good feelings. It's our sense of who we are as a person. It's, you know, for those of us who think this way, it's energy, right, that flows through our body that can motivate creativity and creation and all of these things. So it's a much broader spectrum when we talk about our sexuality. It's all these key pieces about who we are as a person and how we bring our sexuality through our whole life, even when we're not necessarily engaging in sexual behavior, you know.
Right. True. So why do people desire what they desire?
That's such a mystery question, you know. I mean, I think people have been wondering about that forever. What we're starting to see in the science and the research is that it seems like there's a key piece of our sexual desire that we're born with, you know, that's just sort of innate to who we are and that we carry with us, you know, through our whole lives. And so things like potentially sexual orientation, things, certain, you know, desires, certain ways that our body responds to things are just innate to us. We don't really know why it happens that way, but it goes with us through our whole lives. And then there's this other level of desire that we can kind of add on and change and morph and might be because of, you know, memories of early sexual experiences that get really linked into ourselves, you know. And so maybe, you know, one of your hottest early sexual experiences when you were a teenager, that kind of thing stays with you, and you, it becomes a part of your sexual desire repertoire, in a sense. And so there's flexible parts of it, and then there's parts that are innate to us, and then there's this whole mystery piece. Like, we really don't know, you know, what all goes into human sexual desire and yearning and fantasy and all of those things.
Do you find that people get confused between the, you know, the kind of passion that they feel when they first meet somebody compared to the passion that, you know, when that goes away and it's just love? And do people get confused by that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we, you know, we as a culture here in America have a model of sexuality and sexual passion that's based on an 18-year-old's experience, you know, which, you know, for better and for worse, we do not say at that at that phase of our lives. And so, you know, things that worked for us when we were very young and the kind of passion that we felt when we were very young changes all on its own, irregardless of what kind of a relationship you're in. But certainly early phases of relationship, you know, we have what we call new relationship energy, which is just so exciting. It actually changes our brain chemistry. It makes us feel like we're, you know, we have tons of energy to stay up all night talking and making love, and, you know, we don't need to eat, we don't need to think about anything else, and that does go away over time. And we don't see nearly as many models or representations of longer term, that low simmering passion that's there, that I see so many couples able to create. But, you know, we didn't get a guidebook on how to do that. Our guidebook was much more about how to do those early phases of the hookup, the first meetings, those first few months. So, yeah, a lot of people are looking for support. How do we keep the passion going? How do we keep sexuality part of our long-term relationship in a way that's really satisfying and hot, right, that doesn't get boring?
Right, right, exactly, so. Exactly.
Yeah.
When you and I were talking off air, you know, I had asked you how you were able to comfortably talk about this topic, and you told me that it was because of the way that your parents presented sex to you and taught you the right things. So how does the messages from our childhood affect our adult sex life?
Well, they're definitely all mixed up in there, you know, and we're so impressionable as children. So that's the first thing to kind of know and be kind with ourselves about, you know, that we're – when we listen to things, the things we learn as particularly very young children, we're just a sponge to soak all these things up, you know, and we do it without a lot of a critical filter because we don't have the information yet, like our adult mind does, to say, wait, that doesn't really make sense to me, or I don't like that. That's not in my value system. We just soak it all up as a child. And so as an adult, you know, part of the workbook and part of the work I do in therapy with people a lot is to say, let's look back on those things with an adult mind now, with all the other information you've, you know, absorbed and learned over time, with your own values as an adult, and kind of sift through it and sort it out, because we need to look at it consciously. Otherwise, it just lingers there in our unconscious, you know, shaping the way we see things. So the environment that we grew up in, you know, many, many of us, I was very lucky to have parents who were very scientific about sexuality and gave me accurate, you know, information in a pretty neutral way. But most of us don't get that, right?
And right. That's absolutely true.
Absolutely. And not only are we getting no information or potentially inaccurate information, we're getting it fed through filters of shame and fear and anger sometimes. And so all of those things have to be kind of processed, and they can be. That's the good news, right, is that as adults we can look back on that and say, okay, I can understand what was going on with my parents or my siblings or whoever, you know, the adults or older people were who were giving you information, or your peers for that matter, And now I get to look in and decide what feels right for me. You know.
So in order to avoid that, how should we teach our children about sex? What should we say?
I think that we should say that sex and sexuality, I mean, that first question, you know, early that you asked is that first sexual behavior is different than sexuality, and helping our kids understand, like, your sexual energy, you're a sexual person, it's going to be a part of your life, and it's a natural part, right? And then you get to make choices about sexual behavior, and those choices are based on, hopefully, understanding how your body works, understanding how to make safe choices, consequences, and then values, you know, which is unique to each family and each person. And so I think talking to kids openly, you know, not trying to come up with scare tactics, which is, you know, sadly the way we usually talk about sex. I think even sex education in schools, which is supposed to be, you know, value neutral in many cases, is still about the scary things. You know, here's how sex can go wrong. Here's how sex can hurt you. You can get pregnant. You can get STDs. And if we only talk about that, the problem is that then when sex feels scary, or somebody feels like, oh, this feels like a big risk, that doesn't raise a red flag for that child anymore, right? They're like, well, that's just how I was taught sex is. It's this scary, uncomfortable thing that we talked about. So I think we need to talk to children more about the positive things about sex. And people are scared of that. They're scared that if we tell kids that sex is pleasurable, that they're going to want to have more of it. But, you know, there's obviously the messages out there that sex is pleasurable. Kids get that pretty early on, you know.
Yes, they do.
But it's sort of pleasurable in this mysterious secret thing that you have to, you know, figure out on your own. And I think if we can be more open with kids and say, yes, you know, this is the type of feeling that you'll have in your body, the type of emotions you might have around this are very powerful. So let's help you to feel ready for that. Let's help you feel ready to make, you know, choices that are going to feel in integrity for you when you're faced with that as a possibility, being sexual with someone else.
Right. Great advice. Great advice. You know, I'm thinking back to my childhood, and I had a friend, a neighborhood friend, who was highly sexualized at a very young age, you know. She, the way she carried herself, the things that she said, what she seemed to know. And as I got older, I sort of wondered if perhaps she had been abused, sexually abused, because I knew that her father was a raging alcoholic that used to come home in the middle of the night and scare everybody. So who knows what happened. What do you think about that? What do you think when children are highly sexualized at young ages?
Well, I think it's so different now than it was, you know, in your generation or even, you know, even more recent generations. But, you know, now kids are highly sexualized no matter what. I mean, if you watch MTV, which, you know, my understanding, I mean, when I was a kid, MTV was for junior high, early high school kids primarily. It's so sexualized. If you look in kids' clothing stores, you know, their clothes are half shirts and things and mini skirts and lace cutouts. And it's just so our whole culture is becoming more and more sexualized. I think that what we need to be aware of, again, is how to help children prepare within that and how, you know, and understanding that they don't have quite a concept of what that all means. You know, a 9-year-old girl wearing a half shirt doesn't quite understand what that really means in this larger adult context. And so
you're right.
We need to create a container of safety around them for that while not shaming them. You know, not saying oh, that's terrible, don't wear that, and just, you know, giving them this negative message that they don't understand, you know, but to say, wow, you know, bodies are beautiful, it's nice that you, you know, you can show your stomach, and that has a different meaning in the adult context, so let's wear something, you know, to school a little that covers your belly or whatever the case may be. So it's very complicated, and it's complicated by the fact that each generation has a completely different experience of it, because I do think it's changing dramatically.
It is. How confusing for all of us, and I mean that's a really fine line for parents to walk. It's that's a tough job that they have. I mean, they have a tough job anyway, but you know, that's a really tough one.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Can we talk a little bit about...
Especially because we all have our own triggers and shame and history, and parents have to sort of overcome all that so rapidly. It's quite a challenge.
Right, exactly. Right. It's hard to not put your own filter on,
right.
You know, on what you teach your children.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about sexual orientation. And you say in your book that sexual orientation is not only about sex, and that there are multiple aspects of sexual identity or orientation.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I mean, I remember when I was younger and sexual orientation was starting to be talked about more in the media. And, one of the big historical moments that I remember was when Ellen came out, on,
yep.
on TV, not for her
right.
talk show, but her actual sitcom.
Her sitcom, yeah.
Yeah. And one of the conversations I remember at that time was people saying, why do we have to hear about her sex life? And that's a problematic way to view it because, heterosexual people, when they talk about their relationships, about who they love, their partners in life, we don't label that as them talking about their sexuality, right?
True.
And so that's something that I'm hoping we're starting to understand better as a society, is that sexual orientation is about love, for one. You know, very much who you're drawn to, who you want to build a life with, who you feel that romantic feeling for. It also includes who you want to be sexual with and what, what turns you on and what you're drawn to. It also has social and political implications about how you see yourself as a person in the world, and what that means to you. So there's lots of layers that can get quite complex and are unique to each person. And then, as I talk about in the book, these multiple identities we have, then you take all these aspects of your sexual orientation and blend them all with all these aspects of who you are as a cultural person, as a racial person, as a religious person, as a, your career, your role in your family, all of these things blend together. They're not separate components. And so people are often having to process, how does my sexual orientation interact with the fact that I'm the eldest in my family, or that I'm, the daughter of a minister, or, whatever the case may be. And so sexual orientation is a part of who we are. It's not, again, it's not just sexual behavior or what we want to do sexually or who we want to do it with.
Right. Great explanation. That's really good. So, I'm thinking as we're talking, is sex easier when you're doing it in a homosexual way with someone who has the same kind of body with you? Do they have less problems?
No, I wouldn't say that's true, because the thing is, everybody's body is completely different. And so even if you learn, even if you talk about a heterosexual person, if they learn, okay, partner A really liked this, you can't go and apply it to partner B, even though they're the same gender.
Right. True.
We just don't work that way. And so there's not a rule book based on what genitals you have or what genitals you're interacting with. And then to complicate matters more for all of us, our bodies themselves change over time. So even if you learn what partner A likes when they're 25, that may not work for them when they're 35 or 55 or 65, right? So, sexuality for everybody, no matter who your partner is, whether they're same gender, they're different gender than you, is about learning what your partner likes and communicating in the moment mindfully and consciously with them, letting them change, letting yourself change, and being, being open and creative and communicating about that, which I know many, many of us would like to just learn a set of rules or, the idea from, the Friends episode, touch here, touch there, touch A, B, C, C, C,
oh, yeah.
Those kind of things. That would be great. It would be so much simpler. But human bodies are not like that, and And if we, you know, if we can embrace that, it actually can make sexuality so much more fun and rich and stay, you know, stay creative and stay new.
Great. You've taught about sexuality in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And so what did you learn about that? You know, is there, what is universal about sexuality and what's different?
You know, what I found that was universal was, you know, this real desire to connect, you know, with another human being. And that's true of, you know, most people that I talk to about sexuality, is that sexuality tends to draw us out of ourselves. You know, self-pleasuring and masturbation are great and they're a part of our sexuality. But most people eventually want sexuality that's shared with another person. And so that desire to sort of be able to interact and be comfortable and feel safe and feel joyful about it is really universal and, you know, sadly, universally blocked for a lot of people. And so, you know, both in Africa and in here, you know, I found people who said, I have questions, I have fears, I have, you know, a history of misunderstanding or awkward conversations. Help me with that, you know, where's the help for me? And so it's very fun to be able to offer that to people. And then, you know, the things that are very different are the cultural contexts in which sexuality is happening. And so, and the sort of conversation we have about it. So being in Africa, I got to learn a lot of things that I, you know, didn't see sexuality in the way that they did. And the way that they, you know, had learned about sexuality growing up and the expectations about when you would be sexual or what sexuality in marriage would look like felt very culturally different. But ultimately, you know, we as humans are sexual and we're all trying to figure it out. And we want to be a part of that world in a way that feels good and positive for us. So I love to be able to, you know, go into other cultures and have people share with me and talk with me openly about, you know, how sexuality has been presented and how they see it and what they want from it. It's quite a gift.
That is a gift. Mm-hmm. What a fantastic experience to have.
Yes.
You know, in the beginning of the show. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, in the beginning of the show, you know, I was talking about how there's all these Viagra commercials and stuff like that. Has there always been so much erectile dysfunction, or is it just something new?
I imagine that there always has been erectile dysfunction. There's not a lot of statistics. People certainly didn't talk about it at all to the degree that they do now in earlier generations. But, you know, stress has a key factor. And, you know, we live a very stressful lifestyle right now. We expect a lot of our bodies. Other generations have had plenty of stresses of their own. So I don't think that stress is, you know, new to us by any means. But just the lifestyles that we lead, you know, people are pretty exhausted a lot of times when they're trying to be sexual. They're, you know, it's the end of the night after a very long work day, after doing all these things, trying to fit it in between getting the dishes done and watching the probably quite depressing newscast. And, you know, so the context in which we think we're supposed to be sexual, I think, is getting more and more skewed. We're thinking that we should be able to flip a switch and be able to be sexual, you know, as a little thing that's in our our schedule on the day. And then, of course, there's plenty of questions about what hormones in our food or chemicals in the air or things, how that might be affecting our body. And I can't really speak to that. And I honestly, I don't know if there's any studies being done about that in regards to sexual dysfunctions. But it's always been there. I think that, you know, one of the things that's changing, of course, for new generations is this idea that we will be sexual into our 70s, and that is this part of our relationship that we value and want to keep fresh. You know, I don't think my grandparents' generation put a lot of pressure on themselves to stay sexual into their 70s or 80s. I don't know.
That's a good point.
Didn't talk about that.
Yeah, right. They didn't talk about it.
Right, but I don't think so, and certainly not in the same way that we do now. I mean, a lot of people, that, you know, now we have a model for relationship that says you have to be best friends, you build a life together, and you stay sexually, you know, passionate with each other for 30, 40 years. That's a relatively new model, you know. Earlier on, people didn't expect to be best friends with their you know, their spouse. It just wasn't really the model. You were much more about a partnership, building a family model. And if sexuality faded, it might have been individual personal disappointments, you know, and grieving about that. But there wasn't this social pressure that tells people, if you're not having sex and you're not having hot sex, then your relationship is a failure, right? Hmm. I think that's the message people are taking in now. And that's pretty harsh, you know.
It is.
Even for someone like myself who says, yes, sexuality is important and can be such a vibrant part of life, there will be times when sexuality comes and goes and fades, and it's certainly not the key piece to your relationship. I see many, many couples who have a very, very strong relationship, and they say the sexuality piece just isn't working. And we can work with that and shift that and bring it back to life. But it doesn't mean that their relationship is a failure because the sexual piece isn't working, you know?
Right. So without being specific, you know, if what do we do if our sex life is unfulfilling or we think it's unfulfilling?
Yeah. Well, I think the first step is to sort of explore with yourself, you know, what am I missing then, you know? Because a lot of times people can come into this idea of my sexuality is unfulfilling because I'm not, you know, it's not 50 Shades of Grey, as you mentioned before, right? Like that there's this external thing that we think we're supposed to be doing. And so the first step is sort of stop and say, what is it that you really want? You know, maybe it is 50 Shades of Grey, but maybe it isn't. You know, maybe it's something simpler that you're missing. And so, you know, that's the workbook is one of the ways that people can start to explore that for themselves. But you can also just, you know, really think, you know, when I'm yearning for something, when I feel unfulfilled, what is it that I'm missing? What is it that I would really like? And it could be even a feeling. You know, sometimes it's like I just want to feel more loved, or I want to feel more connected, or I want to feel less awkward, you know. And start there, and then, you know, to communicate with your partner. And I totally recognize that that can feel very challenging to find words and have that conversation. But, you know, sorry to let people know, it's going to have to be a part of it, because we can't just share that information by osmosis with our partners. So getting words is going to be important. And so finding a safe, comfortable setting in which you can do that. For some people, that's therapy. You know, some people are able to create that on their own, where you can just really say from a positive perspective, here's what I would like more of. You know, I want to connect with you. I want our sexuality to feel good. There's something missing for me. Can we co-create that together? It's really important, of course, to stay away from blame. You know, a lot of people build up resentment over time of sexual dissatisfaction. And so to sort of clear that out and take ownership of what is it I want, how do I communicate about that with someone so we can make it together. Both of us are creating the sexual experience that we're having. That's going to help a lot, right? To feel like you're partners and co-collaborators and allies.
What if one partner wants something that the other person is turned off by?
Yes, that's a tricky one, you know, and so it means both people have to do some processing. I mean, I don't think anyone should do things sexually that turn them off specifically. That's that feels like a violation of self often for people that isn't okay. But, you know, the person who wants something different can kind of hopefully dig a little deeper and say, so again, like, what is it underneath that I want? You know, maybe it's not that I want to be spanked per se, but I want to feel, you know, I want to feel vulnerable with you, or I want to feel that you're stronger than me. And once you can get a little deeper, again, so it's not about a particular behavior, but maybe it's more about an energy or an emotion or a dynamic between the two of you, then you've got a lot more options to work with, right? There's more ability to say, okay, how can we co-create that then in a way that feels good for both of us?
Right.
So there's some options there. And sometimes, you know, sometimes, to be honest, in therapy and otherwise, those conversations go to a place that say, maybe we're not sexually compatible. And then what? Well, you know, the and then what is a big question, right, that each couple needs to decide for themselves.
Yeah. Right, and I guess that would fall into the same, you know, this is the same kind of discussion as somebody that has a larger sexual appetite than, you know, one partner does than the other.
Right.
And how
there's
they,
always
you
those
know,
imbalances. Yeah. How they manage that, you know, with each other openly and honestly. Yeah.
Right, right. So do men and women want different things?
You know, our culture says that they do, but what we found when we really talked to people statistically in research is that, you know, both men and women across the board, when you say, what do you most want from sexuality, both men and women say, I want physical pleasure and I want connection with a partner. So I don't think we're so different. And getting to sit with people in couples therapy and individual therapy, you know, what I find is that we're much more similar than we are different across genders. And, you know, people want to feel safe and valued, and they want to have this pleasure, and they want to feel comfortable and passionate. And we're not different creatures by any means. And so it's more about what is your individual person, this person sitting across from you, be they male, female, maybe they identify as something different than male or female, what do they want, you know, and how can they express themselves with you, and how can you express themselves with them, so we each get to be our own person, not a category, right?
Right. It seems as if men and women, though, are aroused in different ways, you know. Men are, you know, are visual. It's very easy for them to feel aroused, I think. Women have to be loved and comfortable and safe. Am I wrong? Is that just a stereotype?
Well, I think men need to feel comfortable and safe too, and I know lots of women who are aroused visually. I think our bodies function very differently, and that's created a lot of the ideas that we have. So just because a man might have an erection, that's our cue that he's aroused, but he may not be mentally totally there yet, you know, and may need some more time to build up or touch or safety or connection. Women's bodies take longer to show arousal, right? And so that, you know, allows us to think more and be more aware that women need build-up time. But it's interesting, you know, when I talk to men, I do find, like, many of them say, like, right, I'm not really at full arousal just because my body is there, right? And so how to create, again, a setting where both people get those needs met, and we address, you know, that our bodies definitely do work differently, and therefore that shapes our sexuality and sexual behavior.
Wow. I've learned so much. I know my listeners have too. So, Melissa, as we come down to the end of the show, what is it that you would like to share with us, you know, if people want to get in touch with you or buy your book?
Absolutely. I mean, I would definitely love to share my book. I'm really happy with it. I've gotten great feedback from people who have worked it and gone through the workbook. So it's The Conscious Sexual Self Workbook by Melissa Fritchley, and you can get it on Amazon. So you could probably have it in your hot hands in a day or two if you order it on Amazon. And yes, you know, those of you who are in California who want to come work with me, I do couples intensive, so you can come to beautiful Santa Cruz where I live and, you know, spend a couple nights in a hotel and get some therapy work with me as a couple to get things going. So if you're in California, you can come and work with me. My website is www.MFritchley-therapy.com. So www.mf-therapy.com. And you can find information about me. And for those of you who are healers or professionals out there and want to know more about how to incorporate healthy sexuality in the work you do with clients, whether you're a nurse, a coach, you know, anyone in the healing profession, a doctor. I do lots of consultations about that. I come and talk to organizations and groups about that. So definitely reach out. You know, my hope is that all of us out there can start to incorporate sexuality into our vision of what a healthy life and a healthy person is. And I think we can all do a lot better at that. So I'm hoping to do my part.
Right. I mean, are we supposed to tune out all this visual, all this stuff that's coming into our homes and through the media and all that kind of stuff? Are we just supposed to take it as entertainment?
Right. It's not. I mean, it isn't just entertainment, right? It impacts us much more deeply.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, and it's constantly coming at us. So I guess we really have to get clear with ourselves.
Yeah.
As to where we stand, be comfortable with where we stand, you know, with our own bodies and with our own desires. So,
Right.
Wow, this was a great show, Melissa. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Yeah, it's really been a pleasure. It's really been fun. I hope you had a good time, too. I know I did.
Thank you.
So I want to thank you very, very much. And again, for all my listeners, The Conscious Sexual Self Workbook by Melissa Fritchley, and her name is Fritchle. It's a tough one, but that's how you spell it. All right. Well, I hope you have a wonderful day, and thank you again.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, we are at that point. We're out of time for today. But if you have any comments or questions about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com, RANDIGFINE.com. And stop by my website, randygfine.com. Randy, remember, it's I, not Y. Sign the guest book and leave me some feedback about my shows. If you enjoy listening to my shows, please become a show follower. At the top of every show page, this show page, you can click on Become a Follower, and then you'll get all the programming that's coming up. I have a variety of shows, and they're all really interesting, so you don't want to miss any of that. You know me on the radio, but now you can speak to me privately and confidentially through the telephone about any issues that concern you. For more information about that, please visit my site at clarity.fm/randy-g-fine. That's C-L-A-R-I-T-Y dot F as in Frank, M as in Mary, / Randy, R-A-N-D-I, -g-fine. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, Randy G. Fine, RANDIGFINE.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be the change. There's a better way.